Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Kicking with Cure here on Full Press Radio, episode number 83, and our first episode in the month of July. Hope you're enjoying your 4th of July weekend. Hope you're staying safe. Eat a bunch of food, fireworks, all that stuff. Remember I said last week we were doing Saturday. I wanted to wait, obviously, with the NBA Finals matchup still undecided and a couple other things, so we're here today on a special Monday episode, and we have still a lot of good topics to dive into this week. NBA Finals, Stanley Cup on the verge of being over, baseball picks its all-stars, and the Yankees have an all-star problem. We're going to get into that. And then we'll talk a little bit of Wimbledon as well, and a little bit of a ruling involving the Washington football team, where the NFL didn't exactly do a great thing with what they decided to do. But we're going to get into all that today. I want to remind you, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader, like a Terminator, and three fives. Follow us on Twitter, at FP underscore coverage, and at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You'll get your podcast. Just search Kicking with Kilo. Chances are you will find it. Please leave a rating. I want to hear from you. What do you like? What do you don't like? What you don't like about the show? Any question you have? You can email me at any time, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. And remember to sign up for the Full Press Coverage app on your iOS or Android device. It is free. And you get all of our articles, podcasts, live shows, anything Full Press Coverage related, you get on the app. So please download the app today. We would appreciate it. So let's get into the NBA Finals. And, of course, it is decided. Game 1 tomorrow night in Phoenix, 9 o'clock Eastern on ABC, is the Milwaukee Bucks at the Phoenix Suns. And we kind of talked about Phoenix a little bit last week, because they were up 3-1, and you have to give the Clippers a lot of credit for at least forcing a Game 6 back in L.A. Paul George, I thought, helped his playoff narrative. I don't think he's playoff P anymore. Yes, the Clippers disappointed, but you could still say the Clippers had a successful season. They didn't fail. I mean, they did get to Game 6 of the Western Conference Finals, some a place they hadn't been before. So they've come a long way as well, and Ty Lue deserves a lot of credit. But for Phoenix, it's really not the culmination, because they know they still have work to do. But think about the bubble last year, as we mentioned last week, where they go 8-0 and they kind of start to build on success. They add Chris Paul, who, in my opinion, his legacy is already set. I don't think Chris Paul needs to win this championship to be regarded as one of the better point guards in the last 20, 30 years in this league. He's shown he's a bona fide leader. Look what he did in Game 6. 41 points, 16 of 24 shooting, made 7 threes, 8 assists. The Suns team that for the game shot over 56%, shot 54% from three-point range. Jay Crowder hit 5 threes. And to me, this is a Suns team that has become a well-rounded unit, where Jay Crowder is making big shots and playing good defense. Devin Booker had 22 points, but he really hasn't shot the ball well from three that much. And he's still putting up good numbers. Ayton's been a big factor in the paint, 17 rebounds. Mikal Bridges is doing some good things on defense. You've seen Campaign do a good job as the backup point guard. They have all these pieces, and Monty Williams been able to get it all to work. And, again, you don't want to discredit Phoenix, and I think both these teams in these finals have some kind of break they got along the way, and sometimes you need breaks to happen to get to where you want to go. But it's got to be weird to the casual NBA fan that watches a Bucks-Suns championship to not wonder what could have been. I kind of talked about it last week with Phoenix, where they were down 2-1, and I still wonder, and I'm sure a lot of fans wonder out there, what that series with the Lakers would have been like if Anthony Davis didn't get hurt in Game 3. You could throw that back in the Bucks' face. What would have happened if James Harden didn't have a play on one hamstring, or Kyrie Irving didn't hurt his hamstring in Game 4, didn't get injured in Game 4 of that series, and the Nets were up 2-1. Again, things happen, and it also happened in the Eastern Conference Final, where the Bucks and Hawks were tied 2-2, Trae Young hurts himself stepping on a referee, but Giannis gets hurt as well. I mean, that's really the big thing for the Bucks. Is what you wondered is, okay, Giannis is out with the hyperextended knee, and we'll see if he plays on Tuesday night or not. I don't know if the Bucks should necessarily rush him for Game 1. If you can hold off, maybe do Game 2 on Thursday, you probably could. All the Bucks want to do is split one of these games in Phoenix. But you look at the Bucks as a collective unit, And over the last two games, they were able to do that. I mean, look at Game 5. Chris Middleton has stepped up. I think he's really become that. People looked at him as an all-star, but I think now he's becoming a bona fide all-star the way he's been playing. Drew Holiday's done a nice job, 25 points, 13 assists in Game 5. You see why they brought him in. And you look at guys like Brook Lopez, who has been getting into the paint and putting up good numbers. Bobby Portis is doing a great job, kind of bringing in that physicality. And I think having the Bucks to rely on that internal game and just get the ball in the paint and out-muscle opponents, that's their go-to. And maybe without Giannis in the lineup, all those guys can act a little bit more freely. And you could tell, especially in Game 6, Trae Young is not right. 14 points, 4 of 17 shooting, didn't make a single three-pointer. And I'm not saying Young shouldn't have played. I give him credit for playing. He was not 100% by any means necessary. And it was just easy pickings for the Bucks in this game. Never really had any doubt they were going to win. And it's a credit to Mike Budenholzer because yes, you're going to say, well, if Trae Young was healthy, maybe the Hawks win this series. But Atlanta was also a really bad home team in the playoffs. They won 6 road games, and they went, under 5, either 4-4 at home or something like that. They were not great at home. But Mike Budenholzer took a lot of criticism for underachieving at certain points with this Bucks team. Losing the conference finals to Toronto a couple years ago. Losing to the Heat in the bubble last year. I mean, now this is where the Bucks are supposed to be. They're supposed to be in the NBA Finals with a guy, a transcendent superstar like Giannis, regardless of how you view him. And I do believe this Finals, if Giannis can come back, it would be able to kind of change his legacy in a way if he were to win a championship. Because people said he's overrated, he tries too hard to shoot a three-point shot. If he can come back and have an impact on these Finals, that adds to his legacy more than I think it diminishes Chris Paul's if the Bucks win. But Milwaukee's kind of got that good rhythm they want, where Milwaukee can get the ball down low. Now, it's going to be a little tougher in this series because you've got Ayton. And Ayton has become emerging as one of the better big men in the league. I think that Phoenix has more talent than Atlanta does. I think that creates a mismatch. And to me, I look at this, and you got Milwaukee who wants to play an inside game against Phoenix who wants to play an outside game. And to me, when I look at this matchup, I'm going to go with Phoenix in the series. I'm going to go with them in 6 games. I'm going to go with them in 6 because I think Chris Paul is just too much of a factor. I think Devin Booker is eventually going to find his range from beyond the arc. And I like the way that the glue players for Phoenix. I don't think Milwaukee has an answer for Ayton. Where I think Phoenix defensively can do some good things. We saw that in a couple games in the series, especially in Game 4 against the Clippers. I think the coaching edge goes to Monty Williams or Mike Budenholzer, although I think both have done a really good job this season. I don't think the strange part of this Finals, other than that's Bucks-Suns, and I think that's also the strange part of this Finals, but the craziness is there's not really a team you hate in this championship. And I wonder what that's going to do for the ratings at ESPN, at ABC, because in the past we've had Cavs-Warriors, where usually either you hated LeBron, or you hated Stephen Durant, or you wanted to watch the super team like Golden State, people will watch for many different reasons. You have Lakers would be LeBron. You would have the Nets with maybe Durant or Harden if they had made it this year, and their super team. You don't really have super teams here. You have two teams that have built good teams to get to this point. Phoenix really just helped their young nucleus by signing Chris Paul. Milwaukee traded for Drew Holiday to help Giannis and Chris Middleton. But how does that impact the rating? Because remember, last year was Lakers Heat. I don't think a lot of people felt that was going to be a competitive finals. So that meant, in a sense, that people were going to look at it a little bit differently. This time around, I think actually this matchup brings for a lot more competitiveness. And I think it also makes it a lot more close. It's going to be competitive games. I think it's going to be more evenly matched. You got the 2 seed in the West, the 3 seed in the East. I think in the end, it's going to be a really tight competitive series. And I think also Giannis's lack of health, even if he does come back, and I think he'll come back at some point in this series, but he's not true Giannis. He's not 100% Giannis. I think Phoenix is also becoming a really good home court advantage, but to be fair, Milwaukee's become a really good home court advantage. I mean, the Bucks have lost, I think, one home game in these playoffs. That was game one against the Hawks when Trae Young went off for a all-star caliber performance. Phoenix has lost two games at home, one being game two to the Lakers, and the other being game five against the Clippers. So both these teams play really well in their home buildings, which is going to make home court advantage that much more important in these playoffs, because you're going to have fan bases that haven't seen finals games go crazy. You have a situation I saw in the bottom line on ESPN. No player in this, between these two teams, has won an NBA championship. Not one. Normally you have like a veteran that's on the team and has been on a few teams and like won a championship as a role player and maybe he could be that influence. You don't have that on either side, which is what makes Chris Paul's impact so big in this series. Because he can kind of be that calming influence. Yes, he's never been to a finals, but how many playoff roads has Chris Paul gone through in his career? With New Orleans, with the Clippers, with Houston. He's been there, done that before. Just not on the biggest stage in July in the NBA Finals. But his veteran influence, in addition to the numbers he puts up, I think push Phoenix that extra level. I think, again, both teams will play well in this series. I don't think one will fold over the other, but I think Phoenix pulls it out in six, wins their first championship, and we'll see what happens with Chris Paul then, because remember, he has a $44 million player option for next year, and I don't see how he doesn't pick that up, because, I mean, where else is he going to get that money other than maybe the Knicks? But I don't think the Knicks would give Chris Paul $35, $40 million a year. Would Miami do it? Probably not. Dallas definitely not do it with Luka and now Jason Kidd as head coach. They're not going to do that. Chris Paul and Phoenix seems to be a match made for each other. And they got the veteran they wanted. And it's finally their rebuild has finally come to a head. And the same with Milwaukee as well. So we're going to take a quick break. We will come back and we'll do a little baseball. And yes, if you're wondering, I am going to talk about the Yankees and really what has become a huge problem gone wrong for this franchise, and it's not going to get fixed anytime soon based off the week that was between Boone, Cashman, and Hal. We'll talk about the All-Stars, and we'll get you set for the final week of the first half of the regular season, including some issues Trevor Bauer is going through right now that don't really help him at all. You're listening to Kicking with Kiore here on Full Press Radio. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Welcome back to Kicking with Kiore here on Full Press Radio. We're going to talk some baseball here in this second segment, but want to remind you, of course, that you could follow our live radio lineup in addition to the podcast that we have, FBC Radio Live. Start your day off with Ian Glendon and Mike Debate every weekday morning at 8:30. We have College Credit Hour with Memphis Spence at noon. Dylan and Ross, they save sports in the afternoon, but they save sports all the time, but mostly in the afternoons. Be sure to check out those three live shows. If you see something that we don't have on the network, go to fullpresscoverage.com/contribute and be a part of our team today. Trust me, it's a lot of fun. We do great things together. We have the big fantasy football league coming up in a month or so. Hopefully I can take down that championship again, but we will find out, and we'll get you set for the football season pretty soon. Training camp coming up in a few weeks. Should be a lot of fun, and we'll finally get some answers on Aaron Rodgers. We're not going to talk that today. Let's get into baseball, and we got to get to the Yankees, who did split a doubleheader with the Mets yesterday, but they lose 2 out of 3. And earlier in the week, Aaron Boone made the statement the season was on the line. The Yankees have been reeling for the latter part of a month. They haven't found that consistency. They're not where they should be. So in a week where you are saying the season's on the line, your GM is saying you suck, and the owner is basically putting the blame on the players, you go 2-4 in six games. You lose a game where you were up 8-4 in the ninth, and the Angels hit a grand slam, and they win 11-8. You lose a game in which you led 4-1. Garrett Cole kept walking everybody in yesterday's game, one of the doubleheader, and Rolls Chapman blows another save. And the only reason you really won game two last night is because Gio Urshela hit a three-run homer off Corey Oswalt in the second, and Chad Green retired all nine batters he faced to end the game, including six strikeouts and an immaculate inning in the seventh. It's a weird year for the Yankees and a weird year for their fans because it's a year where they've had two triple plays, two immaculate innings, a no-hitter. They've done almost all the great individual accolades. But as a team, they're mediocre at best. And the team that's basically 10 games behind the Red Sox right now, who they're 0-6 against, and they played Boston eight times in their first 11 games coming out of the break. So when you break it all down, and you look at this Yankee season, I know that you never count the Yankees out. To me, they're done. If you want to consider the goal for this season as a world championship, which is this was the Yankees' goal going into the season, was to win a World Series. They were the prohibitive favorite in the American League. They do not even close look like a team that's a World Series winner. I mean, you can't even say they're a World Series contender with a straight face. It's hard to do, and I've seen people try to do it. They're not even close. They only rely on the home run. They're bad on the bases, bad defensively, inconsistent starting pitching. Whether you think the sticky stuff or the spider tack or whatever has affected Gerrit Cole, either way, he's not been any good. Rolas Chapman has been terrible since then, over the last month or so, and he's an all-star. And this is a lineup that really, outside of Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Gio Urshela, and I would say, when healthy, maybe Luke Voit, has underachieved this year. Gleyber Torres has been terrible this season. Terrible. It's a team that's searching to find itself, and it's come, I think, from a culture with the Yankees to where they don't really, they coddle their players publicly, and they've done it for years. And this is a team that I think believes that they can just turn out any time because of the talent they have. Well, guess what? You're 83 games in, and you're a game over 500. You can't just flip a switch, expect to win 10 of 13 games and get yourself back on track, because the Yankees have done that this year. They've won 10 of 13. They've swept the White Sox. They've beaten the A's. They've beaten the Astros. They've beaten good teams. And then they come back and they'll get swept by the Tigers, or they'll lose some weird games to the Royals, or they'll lose to the Twins like they did when Chapman gave the home runs to Donaldson and Cruz, or they'll lose 5-6 in a row and get right back to where they started. Even if the Yankees do great against Seattle and Houston this week and they're going on the road, they have to do a lot more to convince you they're going to get back in the mix. Right now, if you look at the wild card, they're 5.5 back of the A's, tied with the Angels, who they just lost to, and the Angels have won 4 in a row. So think of this if you're a Yankees fan out there. Are you better than Boston? Hell no. Are you better than Houston? No. Are you better than the White Sox? No. Are you better than Tampa? No. Are you better than Oakland? No. You're playing Seattle this week, who I think is better than the Yankees right now, the way the Mariners are playing. They've been really good over the last few weeks. Are you better than Toronto? Outside of the sweep Toronto gave you in Buffalo, you swept Toronto and Buffalo, the Blue Jays have been better than you for the bulk of the year. And Boston's going to add. Tampa's going to add at the deadline. Toronto's going to add at the deadline. And Boston's going to add just by getting Chris Sale back at some point. What are you going to add? Corey Kluber when he comes back from injury? Sometimes, yes, you just have to accept it's not your year. And I thought about this week. I went back to 2016 with the Yankees. The year they traded Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs to get Gleyber Torres. Traded Andrew Miller to the Indians to get Justice Sheffield and Clint Frazier. And traded Carlos Beltran to the Rangers to get Dylan Tate, who eventually got traded to Baltimore for Zach Britton. On July 5th, 2016, the Yankees were 41-42. On July 5th this year, Yankees are 42-41. If you actually look at it, the 2016 team, which I think people understood they were not in a position to win, we're still four games back in the wild card. This one's almost six. Four back in the loss column. So let's just say about even. The 2016 team sold. It was, to me, an easy decision. This is an easy decision to me. If they buy a player on a rental, or stay with the same group and expect it to get better, then to me that's an indictment on the front office and it's an indictment on Brian Cashman. Because this team needs to look itself in the mirror and say, how do we get better long term? How do we win championships, not a championship? Look, you've made your bed. You got to lie in it from a front office standpoint. You didn't want to go over the luxury tax, which I absolutely understand. Because I don't think fans realize that the Yankees could lose 10 picks in the first, drop their first round pick 10 slots, lose international money that they've relied on to get some really talented players into the system. Gary Sanchez, Luis Severino, etc. They are really good on the international free agent market, so they can't afford that either. They trade Adam Ottavino to the Red Sox, which is an absolute joke. Let Garrett Whitlock go to the Red Sox in the Rule 5 draft, which does not look good for them. Masahiro Tanaka is gone. They could use his consistency in their starting pitching. DJ LeMahieu was underachieved in his first year of a six-year contract. Just nothing has worked for the Yankees. And Corey Kluber got injured. Jameson Taillon's been basically a miss this season so far. And to me, you've got to sell. Now, what does selling mean? I don't think selling means trading Aaron Judge and trading Gary Sanchez. To me, if I'm the Yankees, and if they do decide to make a GM change, and a managerial change, because, well, I don't think Aaron Boone is a terrible manager. I think he's the third best manager in the division behind Kevin Cash and Alex Cora. And if that's the case, can the Yankees accept having a manager who's the third best in his own division? I don't think you can. But if you look to the winter to maybe look at Judge and Sanchez trade proposals, you get more teams involved, and you might get a better package when you get more teams involved. So I don't think those two are on the board, nor should there be. But I understand if people want to have the conversation. I'll give you a couple names. And I don't think Chapman is either because he has $16 million next year, and I don't think teams are going to want to pick that up unless the Yankees eat money, which they're not going to do this year. So I'll give you a couple names. One's Gio Urshela, who has a couple years left in his contract, going to turn 30 at the end of the year. And the question is he your long-term answer at third base? I don't think so. So if that's the case, and you want to put Miguel Andujar, move him out of left field, which he's not a natural outfielder, move him back to third base for the latter portion of the season, and then open up an outfield spot for either a trade or adding a guy like from AAA, like Trey Ambergy, who's not on the 40-man, but he's crushing the ball this season, you could do that. So you trade Urshela, get some pieces back, because the Yankees need upper-level talent. I'll get into the whole minor league argument in a minute. But Urshela would be one of the better trade bats on this market. All right, so you try to figure out that. Go to the pitching side. You have nobody you could trade in the starting pitching, except you want to try to look at Jordan Montgomery, but I don't think many teams give up a lot for him. I look at that bullpen. The Yankees were able to at least get a good return back at the time for their relievers 5 years ago. Chapman, I think, is off the board, and you're not going to be able to trade him. Britton has been banged up. I don't know if a team is going to try to trade for Zach Britton, although if he comes back healthy over the next few weeks, maybe that's an option. So here's your name I think you could focus on. Chad Green. Now, I say Chad Green because I think he can be a setup man for a contender, and I think he can be a closer for a contender. He's 30 years old, going to be 31 in May of next year. You look at his contract, he's under contract for one more season. So a team would get Chad Green for two pennant races. And with the value of getting closers, it's hard to find closers on this market. I mean, if you want to say look at a team like the Phillies who need a closer. You want to look at a couple teams in the American League even that need a closer. We know the Yankees aren't afraid to trade in the division. We saw it with Adam Ottavino. Chad Green, to me, would be a really good fit for a team. And it would allow the Yankees to do a couple of things. One, it would allow them to look at Jonathan Loaisiga as a permanent eighth inning guy or a potential closer candidate. And he's been really good this season. And clearly the organization trusts him. And the other one would be calling up a guy from AAA by the name of Albert Abreu, who has been really good this season. They got him from the Astros in the Brian McCann deal a couple of years ago. He can throw triple digits and now would make Albert Abreu into the Chad Green role in that bullpen. I'm not advocating the Yankees to tear it all down. I'm not doing that. But here's a problem they have. They have no major league roster flexibility. They have only one position player on the 40-man roster, and that's Esteban Florial. That's not enough. You need. I know that there's a fascination with pitchers on the 40-man, and they have a lot of good young, talented pitchers. But they've created this problem where if they add somebody to the 40-man, like a Trey Ambergy or a Hoy Park, they're going to have to DFA a reliever, and, for example, like a Brooks Kryske or a Nick Nelson, and somebody's going to pick them up within 5 seconds. So they're stuck. And they're stuck in the minor league level because there are 4 minor league teams because they made the system shorter in terms of number of teams in the system. And you can't stash your talent in a bunch of rookie-level teams anymore. Where these teams are so good, these Yankee affiliates, nobody's worse than about 15 games over 500 or around that area. And some players that are hitting the ball well and pitching well are stuck because they have nowhere to move up. So the Yankees can't buy because buying would be the easy thing because you could trade players, prospects, to kind of make space. You can't trade anybody now. You can only trade major league talent away and add, which I do think they could use some upper-level talent. I mean, put some up top-tier prospects at AAA, which their AAA team doesn't really have any top prospects outside of Luis Gil. Maybe add some guys to AA who have been really good this season. I don't think they need to get lower-level talent. They're going to add that in the draft next week as well. So they have a major league roster inflexibility and a minor league roster inflexibility. So organizationally, it's a mess. And to me, we remember Brian Cashman saying a month ago, it's a package deal. So I know if the Yankees miss the playoffs this season, Aaron Boone's going to get fired. Or if they haven't picked up his contract for next year, just not get renewed. And if Aaron Boone doesn't get renewed, if you're a Yankee fan, and I made this argument on the From the Backfield to the Bronx podcast this week, would you want the Yankees to overhaul player development essentially again if they fired the general manager? It's a tough one to take, but somebody's got to pay. If you miss the playoffs and you're the Yankees, somebody's got to pay. I don't think firing the hitting coach would be enough, especially when you need to get fans back in the stadium for 2022. So Hal's got to look at it and think, if I fire Aaron, can I really have Cashman bring in somebody else who would be honestly just like Aaron Boone? He wouldn't really make that big culture switch. So I think if Aaron was gone, Brian would have to go too. And I hate saying that because Cashman's done such a great job for this organization over the last 20-plus years. But it's just the reality. And I think they've got no shot because in the week where the manager said the season's on the line and you go 2-4, the message was kind of given for you. They're not good enough this year. And it's not their season. The other weird situation this week involving the Dodgers. Trevor Bauer, who it was a report in The Athletic, had a domestic violence restraining order filed against him. A woman accused him of sexual assault, saying that Bauer strangled her to the point of unconsciousness during sex on multiple occasions, repeatedly punched her in the face, and left her with injuries. Bauer's right now under criminal investigation in Pasadena, California. MLB, I know from what Buster Olney said last night on the Sunday night broadcast, is trying to talk to the woman and to Bauer, but because there's a criminal investigation, it's hard to talk to Bauer. Baseball did the right thing, putting him on administrative leave. I know people wanted to blame the Dodgers, and I get that, for not doing it sooner. But the Dodgers, I'm sure, are waiting for baseball to make a decision. And at least administrative leave allows Bauer to have not started that game yesterday. I don't think baseball could have afforded him to start that game yesterday, and he needs to realize that as well. He's not appealing. He did not appeal the administrative leave, which I think was a smart decision on his part. It's a weird situation with him, and I think baseball would have to make it an indefinite leave until the criminal investigation clears, and then after the criminal investigation clears, they can talk to Bauer and figure out maybe if there's a suspension or something along those lines if he's found to have done these things, which are sick things. And there is innocent until proven guilty, but when you hear these accusations, I don't blame people for feeling like these things are heinous. Like it's hard for me to even look at the report in The Athletic and wonder if he did those things. You have to wonder what's Trevor Bauer's future. Remains to be seen. looking at the All-Star game next week, and to me, I think it's all about Shohei Ohtani. And we're going to get into more next week with what the All-Star game is and things like that. And I'm going to make the argument next week that I think Shohei Ohtani is the new face of baseball. But you look at the All-Star rosters, and to me, it's not a lot of surprise. I don't think there's a huge bust. And remember, I think it's unfair to say huge bust because players are going to opt to not play in the game. There'll be injuries, and players will get on the roster then. To me, what stands out is the National League, and to me, what stands out is the starting pitchers. Corbin Burns, Yu Darvish, Jacob DeGrom, who's already said he's not pitching in the game. Kevin Gausman, who would be the Cy Young in any other year that isn't Jacob DeGrom. Herman Marquez, Trevor Rogers, Zach Wheeler, and Brandon Woodruff. And then you've got Josh Hader and Craig Kimbrell, Mark Melanson, and Alex Reyes coming out of the bullpen. A lot of talent on the National League squad in the pitching ranks. For the American League, I'm excited about the starters more so. Because you've got Devers at third, Bogarts at short, Vlad Jr. at first. Ohtani is going to be the DH and potentially pitching in this game. Aaron Judge. Sal Perez very quietly, a 20-home-run season behind the plate. So I think the AL lineup is fun, but I love the NL pitching. I think it's going to make for a fun all-star week at Coors Field. But I don't really think there's been a significant snub. I think the voting process has been interesting. And it should make for a fun game. So let's take a look at the standings, and then we'll give you the games to watch this week. The Red Sox lead the Rays by 4.5. Boston was very impressed against Oakland, 1-2 out of 3. Lost the Saturday game in 12 innings, but besides that, they played really well. Toronto's 8.5 back. The Yankees, we mentioned, 10 games back. We're going to do wild card standings probably around the deadline. So we normally just update you on division. We'll add the wild card in toward the end of the month. In the AL Central, the White Sox, a 6-game lead on the Indians. Cleveland got swept by the Astros. They've lost 6 straight, and it's clear they missed Shane Bieber in that rotation. So the White Sox starting to pull away from Detroit, Kansas City, and Minnesota. In the West, the Astros, a 3.5-game lead on the A's. Houston was impressive their weekend because they got swept by the O's at home earlier in the week and then bounced back with a 4-game sweep in Cleveland. They're 3.5 ahead of the A's, 7 ahead of Seattle, and 9 ahead of the Angels, who've won 4 in a row. In the NL East, despite all the injuries and despite the weirdness that the Mets season is, they're 3.5-game lead over the Braves, who are starting to play a little better. They play the Pirates to start the week, so Atlanta could bounce back. Nationals are 4 back, but they just lost Kyle Schwarber to the IL, and they have some rough games coming up this week on the road. Phillies are 4.5 back, but their bullpen's still a mess. And then the Marlins are 9 back. In the Central, the Brewers had an 11-game win streak before yesterday. Nevertheless, they lead the Reds by 7 in the Central. They lead the Cubs, who've lost 9 straight since that no-hitter by Zach Davies and their relievers, by 8.5. Cardinals are 10 back, so Milwaukee's starting to run away with the Central a little bit. And in the West, which is going to have, I think, 3 playoff teams, the Giants are a half game ahead of the Dodgers, who have won 9 straight games. Dodgers have bounced back in a big way. Padres are 4.5 back, but they've hit 50 wins. And then Colorado and Arizona bringing up the rear in the division. So let's take a look at some of the games to keep an eye on this week. And to me, we brought up one of the matchups this week. The Yankees and the Mariners is one. I think it's a really fun matchup in Seattle. I think Tuesday's matchup is going to be cool because Justice Sheffield is going to start for Seattle, a former Yankees prospect. We'll see how that goes. Other matchups this week, Cleveland at Tampa Bay, I think it's going to be a good game. Milwaukee at the Mets, battle division leaders, I think that'll be fun. Brandon Woodruff goes tonight. Jacob DeGrom goes on Tuesday, so you get 2 top pitchers in that series. Nationals at Padres, we mentioned tough week coming up for Washington, so that should be a fun matchup. And Boston against the Angels, of course, it's Shohei Ohtani against the Red Sox. Why would you not watch that? And then moving to the weekend, you have Yankees-Astros, which you know is going to be a little bit hostile in Houston because those Astro fans want payback for the way that the Yankee fan treated the Astro players in May. Gerrit Cole likely is going to start in that series, so you know he'll probably get booed in Houston. I don't know. Would he get? Tweet me, @AdbergenAir555, if you're an Astro fan. Would you boo Gerrit Cole? I don't know. I don't think he can. I mean, you can boo him for choosing the Yankees, I guess. That's a tough one. I got to have to think about that one a little bit this week. But Yankees-Astros this weekend in Houston. You have the Phillies at the Red Sox, interleague matchup there. Toronto at Tampa, which we just saw last week. Nationals at the Giants. So again, Washington playing San Diego and San Francisco. It's really going to test if they're a buyer at the deadline or not. Max Scherzer had an all-star case. Their bullpen's been a lot better, but they just got swept in four games by the Dodgers, which is not anything where you should like go to fire the manager or the GM on. I'm not saying that at all, but for a team that was starting to get red hot, and then Kyle Schwarber, who's been their best hitter, gets hurt, that's a tough one for Washington. So coming up next, we're going to wrap it up with a couple of other sports. We're going to get into the hockey. Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Final tonight. We're going to get into what the ruling with the Washington football team, and we're going to get into Wimbledon. Manic Monday taking place as we speak. So that remember, that next year, Wimbledon will have a Sunday matchup. And I'm going to touch on the Olympics, too. What went on with Shakari Richardson this week and going out with the IOC. So we're going to get into a couple of things. Maybe we'll do name, image, and likeness, too. Although I think we didn't do that last week, so we'll do name, image, and likeness. We'll do a bunch of random sports coming up on the final segment of Kick'em with Keeler here on Full Press Radio. We will be right back. Welcome back to one more segment for the week here on Kick'em with Keeler. Again, we will be back later this weekend, kind of get you set for the All-Star game, talk about the week that was in sports, talk about the first two games of the NBA Finals. Remember, we'll probably have another show before Game 3 in Milwaukee. And we'll wrap up the Stanley Cup Final, which we're probably going to do now because tonight, Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals on NBC, potentially the last NHL game on NBC with the contract moving to ESPN and TNT and Turner Sports next year. And it's been all Tampa Bay Lightning in this series. And to me, it's not a surprise that Tampa's up 3-0. I'm shocked that Montreal hasn't been able to win a game in this series, but the Lightning have just been too good. And it comes down to, I think they've just got too many weapons that the Canadiens can't really counteract when you look at the Stanley Cup Final. Because to me, I look at Tampa Bay, they've scored 14 goals in the series. Montreal scored 5. Carey Price has not been the same goalie that he was to begin the playoffs and their Montreal's Cinderella run to the finals. Because it's been a Cinderella run for them. They were down 3-1 to Toronto. And then ended up winning 3 straight, swept Winnipeg, beat Vegas, who was tied for the best record in terms of points in the NHL this season. But Tampa Bay can just hit on all cylinders, whether it's Kucherov, whether it's Braden Point, whether it's that crazy goal in the second period in Game 2 by Blake Coleman. They're getting goals from all over the place with this team. It's no surprise. So the Lightning are one win away from winning back-to-back Stanley Cup playoffs, or Stanley Cup titles. And it puts them in a rarefied air, in a sense. I mean, how often do you have the chance to watch a team that's won back-to-back Stanley Cups? It does not happen very often. Now, I saw something just came across as I'm searching something. Tampa Mayor Jane Castor, this was the title on USA Today, suggests the Lightning should lose Game 4. The only way you would make that argument is the Lightning would lose and then win Game 5 at home. To me, I'd rather just get it over with and win the whole thing. But I want to look at where the Lightning works. I kind of thought about that this week. I was talking to a friend of mine about the NHL. And the Lightning had 128 points, best team by far in the regular season, and got swept by Columbus in the first round. Remember, that was one of the biggest NHL upsets anybody had seen in a long time because the Lightning looked like the prohibitive favorite. And you wondered, okay, with this team that had 113 points in 2017, 2018, and 128 the year after, be able to finally get a cup. Now they're on the verge of 2 in a row. And it's not often in sports that we see a franchise crumble on that big a stage and then bounce back to win the next 2 trophies in their respective sport. I was trying to think of that. This would be the equivalent of the Yankees blowing the 3-0 lead to the Red Sox in 04 and then winning the 05 and 06 World Series. That obviously did not happen, but I was trying to think of an equivalent. Another one would be a top seed in the NFL loses their first playoff game, wins the next 2 Super Bowls. Doesn't happen very often. Especially in the NFL, there's too much parity. So at the NHL, yeah, this would be one of the more impressive runs in a long time. by the Lightning. And they've built a really good team there. And you look at Kucherov and Stamkos, and the list, I've listed a bunch of players that have really played a factor on this team. So it's no hanging your head if you're Montreal, even if you get swept. The Lightning just have too much talent. So to me, props to Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't expect to be talking about a series still going on. The next time we would be on would be before Game 7. I don't think Montreal is getting to that point. So if the Lightning win tonight, they're also going to be the second team. They would be the second team in NHL history to win the Stanley Cup against the Canadiens in Montreal. The last team to do that was Calgary in 1989. So that's a fun fact. I'm trying to see real quick. Actually, we'll wait on that. I think the last repeat had to be like the Red Wings or something for back-to-back Stanley Cups. But overall, a fun process nevertheless. So let's get into the football. And the one thing I want to talk about the NFL this week is the Washington football team. The NFL announced its findings for the investigation into Washington's workplace culture, which made it uncomfortable for both men and women alike, especially women. And they found that the ruling was they only fined the team $10 million. The report, which was done by Beth Wilkinson, the NFL said there was no written report. It was an oral report. Dan Snyder was not suspended by the league, but his wife, Tanya Snyder, was going to be the co-CEO, and she'll take over the day-to-day operations. And I'm sorry, the NFL got this wrong. $10 million is essentially pocket change for Dan Snyder, and it's something that, from what I've been reading, you could write that off, and it could be less than $10 million because it's going to different charities. The NFL interviewed 150 people for this investigation. But if you're somebody who was involved in that, why can't you have a written report? The NFL would spend a bunch of time, and I know these two situations are totally different. They would spend a bunch of time if it was an on-field thing. They would have like 200 pages of reports, and you have oral report for this? It's just tone deaf by the NFL. And maybe it's not surprising because we've seen so many cases in the past where the NFL has looked tone deaf. They kind of do here. Because, again, how do you have a huge report like this that goes into a professional sports league's workplace culture, which hopefully we don't have any more of these incidents in the future, but maybe we're naive and maybe people still act this way, which is crazy. But to have no written report on this is a joke. People need to know these things so it doesn't happen again. So, bad job by the Washington football team just for what went on in their organization. But bad job by the NFL for only putting a fine together. At least there should have been draft picks, should have been suspended. If you are taking this issue seriously, and I do believe they are, you needed to up the punishment a lot more than what they did. Punishment was not enough. It wasn't even close. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised, though, as I mentioned. You got college sports with the name, image, and likeness thing. And I've talked about this on the show this week, in the past shows we've done. I think it's great for the athlete. I think they finally get a chance to profit off of their name and off their success. And hopefully this leads to more reforms in the NCAA. I don't really know I don't think it will create an unfair edge in recruiting. Maybe it does because now if you're a team like Duke, it's something you go to these big-time schools, you get more opportunities to benefit off your name, image, and likeness. But still, it's a great thing for college athletes. They deserve it. They make a lot for these schools in football and basketball, and it's time they were able to profit off of that. So good thing for those players. The one thing I want to wrap up with this week was what happened in track and field. Now, we're going to try to do an Olympic theme show in a couple of weeks. And the big story this week was involving U.S. sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson. She's got the cool-looking hair that I think people really followed, and she was going to be likely the favorite in the women's 100 meters. And the Americans have not had a 100-meter dash winner in the women's side in a long time. But She failed the drug test. She tested positive for THC, which is something you find in marijuana. And because of the rules by the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, she is suspended for 1 month, meaning she can't run on the 100 meters. Now, she has a possibility that she can run on the 4x100 relay, which I think that the U.S. Olympic Committee and the Anti-Doping Agency and all, they need to come together and let her run. Because what she said, and she said it on the Today Show on NBC, she took the marijuana after she found out from a reporter about her mother dying. And I guess tried to use it as a coping mechanism and hiding her pain, which is totally understandable. She's not using marijuana to get a competitive advantage. She's not using marijuana to get an edge on other athletes. Now, you can hate the rule, and I agree with you. I agree with people out there. Marijuana is becoming legal in a lot of these states, and it's something I think that these agencies have to consider eventually when they look into changing these rules. But it's the rule. It's like kind of we just talked about the NCAA. Like, remember people like Reggie Bush lost their Heisman? The people now want to talk about should we retroactively give Reggie Bush back his Heisman? No. They broke the rule. I think I saw Michael Kay say this because I listen to Michael Kay show a lot. You break the speed limit and the next day they change the speed limit, you don't get to have your ticket revoked. You broke the speed limit on that day. It's a sad reality. And it's a lesson, and I'm glad Shakari Richardson is taking accountability for it, because I think it's the right approach she should take. Believe me, I understand. I'm not happy about the ruling either. I get it. I would have loved to watch her race in the 100 meters, get a gold medal for Team USA. But these are sometimes when you have these things, and it's tougher to think about it when you're feeling emotional about losing a loved one. But those are the consequences for your actions. Sadly, that's just the way it is, unfortunately. Now, there's still great track and field stars in the American side. We'll see if one of the people that take Shakari Richardson's spot could have maybe a big Olympics in Tokyo. We know about Allison Felix in the 400 meters, so there are other stories to watch, but it's sad to see one of the top storylines, because she was going to be a star in the Olympics. Like, I actually watched the 100 meters in the U.S. Olympic trials, because I like to watch kind of these things, kind of see who I'm going to watch in the Olympics. And she was fantastic. Like, she could be, was going to be likely one of the stars in Tokyo. And like I said, I hope that they at least allow her to run in the 4x100, because then I'm going to think of it differently. If they go, oh, after 30 days, once you serve your 30-day suspension, you should be able to run in the 100-meter relay. I have no problem with that by any means. But I've seen people say, oh, this is a stupid rule, she shouldn't be suspended. I understand. Believe me, I understand. But it comes down to there's consequences for your actions, and it's a bad rule, just like there are bad laws out there, but it's a law, it's a rule. Gotta follow it. Wanna wrap it up with Wimbledon this week. Again, Manic Monday is today. Which, if you're not familiar with Manic Monday, all 16 matches get played, 8 men, 8 women on the same day. It's always a lot of fun to watch. Drama constantly, and we've already had some drama today. So let's get into what's gone on so far. Let's start with the men's side. Novak Djokovic right now looks like the favorite to win his third slam in a row. He's dominated. He's going to play a Hungarian by the name of Martin Fucsovics in the quarters, who upset Andrei Rublev in 5 sets, the 5 seed. So Djokovic should have an easy time. He would play either Karen Khachanov or Denis Shapovalov. And Shapovalov's been really good this tournament. He beat Andy Murray on center court, which is not easy to do, even though Andy Murray is not what he once was. That should be a fun match. Marco Berrettini from Italy is in. He's going to play the winner of Algir Aliassime and Alex Zverev of Germany. And, of course, Roger Federer on the bottom side if seeds hold would play Dmitry Medvedev in the quarters. But Federer and Medvedev might be the only test for Djokovic en route to a third straight slam and his quest to win a grand slam. And in the ladies' singles, Ash Barty, the top seed in Australia, is through in straight sets today over the French Open champ Krejcova. So Barty's in the quarter. She'll play an unseeded player there. Angie Kerber beat Coco Gauff earlier this morning, so the last chance for a big American run at a slam is over. So Kerber, I think Kerber could be the wild card here, but Makova, who beat the 30th seed Bedosa, she's one of those under-the-radar players too. So a potential Barty's Kerber semi should be fun to watch. Or Makova could be a surprise. Karolina Pliskova won in straight sets. She'll play Golubic from Switzerland. Mass and Keys lost to her in straight sets, so no American women is left in the draw. And Onja Bor from Turkey making a run. She upset last year's French Open champ Iga Swiatek in three sets. She'll play the two-seed Sabalenka, who survived a three-set match with Rybakina of Kazakhstan. So pretty much a wide-open women's draw there. I kind of would lean toward... You know what? I'm gonna pick Kerber, actually. I like the way she's playing. She's won three slams before. I think she's the only player with a slam left. Ash Barty, I believe... Oh, no, Ash Barty won the French 2 years ago. So Barty and Kerber are the only two with slams in this part of the draw that are left in the final eight. So I'm going to go with Kerber, though. I think she beats Barty and wins the Wimbledon side. And the men, I'm going with Djokovic. It's an obvious pick. Very quickly as well, Euro 2020. Semifinals begin tomorrow. Spain against Italy. Spain surviving in PKs over Switzerland. Switzerland's terrible in PKs. Against Italy, who was very impressive against Belgium. I'm going to go with Italy in this game. Again, I'm not a huge soccer analysis, but I like the way Italy's been performing in Spain. Very up and down this tournament. Really, I think they benefited from, as I mentioned, Slovakia with the own goal from the group stage. And then Croatia kind of came back from two goals on it, but Spain won an extra time. I think Spain playing extra time the last couple matches is going to hurt them. So I'm going to go with Italy here. And then Denmark against England on Wednesday. And I'm riding the story here. I'm picking Denmark. I know England has been shutting out people left and right. They've hadn't conceded a goal. They were dominant against Ukraine in the quarterfinals. There's something about Denmark, though, and they've rallied around what happened in group play with Christian Eriksen, who underwent cardiac arrest, and he's unfortunately not being able to be with the team. But they've really, since that game, been impressive. They almost beat Belgium. They crushed Russia, crushed Wales. Beat a really good Czech Republic team that was a big surprise, who had beaten the Dutch in the round of 16. I like their story. I like their playing with nothing to lose. I like that they've got a purpose around them. And England's been really good. Harry Kane's woken up for England, along with Sterling and the talent they have. But sometimes you just, in sports, sometimes it's meant to be. And I think it might be meant to be, at the very least, for Denmark to make the final Sunday. So I'm going to go with the Italy against Denmark for the championship. Although if England wins, it would Spain-England or Italy-England would be a really fun Euro championship. So I want to say thanks, everybody, for tuning in this week. I want to remind you can follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader like a Terminator, and three fives. Follow us on Twitter at FP_coverage, at Full Press Radio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, just search Kicking with Keeler. Tell me what you like, you don't like, please leave a ring, but I want to hear from you. You can email me, rickjkeeler@gmail.com. Remember to download the Full Press Coverage app. It's free, so you get all of our live shows, articles, podcasts, anything you get your hands on for Full Press Coverage. It is there, so be sure to check that out. You can check out my work over at Barrett Sports Media. Got a couple articles going up this week about stuff people say. I think I'm going to write something about, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, part two, though, of the interview that Sean McVay and Peter Schrager did with Troy Aikman. I think it's been really good to learn about his broadcasting career. So I'm going to write a little bit more about that, probably. And then you can check out our work at pinstripeprospects.com. We are a system that covers the Yankee farm system. We do a show every week from the backfields to the Bronx. This week, Joe Doyle from Prospects Live is going to join to preview Sunday's draft. We're going to look also at the Yankees organizationally, and I mentioned some of their flexibility issues. We're going to dive into that a little bit more on the show next week, so I think it's worth doing. The draft is Sunday. Our team is going to have you covered Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, with all the best draft coverage you can get your hands on. And we look forward to that. It's one of our favorite moments as a site that covers the minor league system. So next week, NBA Finals, we're going to get into the first two games. Stanley Cup Final will be over, most likely. We'll preview the All-Star Game, and I'll talk about why Shohei Ohtani might be the new face of baseball. Wrap up Wimbledon. We'll wrap up. We'll get a look ahead to the British Open in a couple weeks. Maybe we'll look back at the ESPYs. ESPYs are Saturday, too, so maybe we'll do a little bit of that as well. So thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Kicking with Keeler. Thanks for kicking with me, Ricky Keeler, wrapping up your 4th of July weekend. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you back here later this weekend.